always you, listeners, supporters, contributors to this radio station, 99.5 FM WBAI. We're delighted to be back, and that's the first part, the first hurdle, if you will, of us getting back to where we were and eclipsing that was to get back on the air. And thanks to very much a number of people, but certainly our lead attorney, Arthur Schwartz, did this pro bono. And it's really extraordinary, his efforts. He's one of those lawyers you'll like. As Arthur says, it's movement building time on the radio. And yes, it is. It is that. Thanks to you. Again, give to WBAI.org. Bike Snob with Eben Wise. Eben Wise is coming up in just a moment, so please do stay tuned.
Hey, this is Chaka Khan, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Hello, New York. My name is Arthur Schwartz. You may know me as an activist attorney, or as a founder of the New York Progressive Action Network, or as counsel for Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, and Bernie Sanders. I'm proud to announce my latest foray into activism as the host of a program at WBAI. The show is called Advocating for Justice. It airs every Monday from 5 to 6 p.m. Each week, we'll talk to activists who are successfully employing strategies which address the challenges we are facing in a post-Trump and post-Hillary world. Again, that's Advocating for Justice, Mondays at 5 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM. It will be movement-building time on the radio.
Movement-building time on the radio. Arthur Schwartz, Advocating for Justice. A little bit later on this afternoon, early evening, WBAI New York. It's 10 o'clock. Coming up next, Bike Snob with Eben Wise.
Hello. You're listening to Bike Snob on WBAI. I'm Eben Wise. First of all, I would just like to give a very deep thanks to our veterans on this Veterans Day. And I would also like, before we get started, to thank you all for your support of this station, especially during this last month, which was a rough month, as you may have noticed. This station runs on listener support, and we need your support here. So please pledge, become a BAI buddy. Go to the website, give to WBAI.org. That's give to, number two, WBAI.org. Pledge and become a WBAI buddy and keep all of this programming going. Thank you very much. So this is Bike Snob again. I'm Eben Wise. It has been a while since my last show, which was on October 1st. Since then, a lot has happened out on the streets for New York City's cyclists. A lot of deaths. This has been a brutal year. This past Saturday, 25-year-old Matt Travis was killed in Harlem by the Willis Avenue Bridge by a hit-and-run dump truck driver making an illegal turn. He was the 28th bicycling death in New York City in 2019. Just to remind you, 2018, we had 10 deaths for all of that year. I'm going to tell you everybody who's died while I've been gone. This is not a happy return. I'm sorry. I'm going to tell you every bicyclist that has been killed since this show was last broadcast, which was only on October 1st. Evgeny Meskin, 87, killed crossing Ocean Parkway on a bike in Brooklyn. He was hit on October 30th. He died the next day. Some witnesses on the scene said the driver sped up to beat the light. The NYPD didn't go with that one. They said he went against the traffic signal. He was the 27th death. Ada Martinez, 66, hit by a van driver in Rockaway on September 27th, died on October 12th. She was in the bike lane and had the light. The NYPD said she swerved and fell in front of the van or something like that. By the way, speeding is so bad in Rockaway that the Post recently reported that these new school zone speed cameras issued almost 12,000 tickets there in 15 days. Keep in mind, speed cameras only issue tickets to drivers who are going more than 10 miles per hour over the speed limit. So that is a deadly situation in Rockaway. Bogdan Darmetko, 65 years old, killed in Broad Channel in Queens on Cross Bay Boulevard, October 13th. Residents had been complaining for years about speeding drivers on that stretch of road. The roadway was being milled and was completely unmarked when this death occurred. And finally, 10-year-old boy was killed on October 5th in Kensington, Brooklyn, on his bicycle. He was killed in the crosswalk on his bicycle by an unlicensed driver. He was the 24th person on a bicycle killed in New York City this year. Though, as many have pointed out, calling a 10-year-old boy a cyclist, as a lot of headlines did, calling this a cyclist death, it's not appropriate. A lot of people have pointed this out. I agree with them. It's not appropriate in most cases, in fact, to call these victims cyclists. These are just people that happen to be on bikes. A lot of New Yorkers ride bikes. A lot of New Yorkers who don't necessarily consider themselves cyclists ride bikes. It's just one of the many ways we choose to get around. Calling these victims cyclists turns them into some group you can ascribe universal properties to. But it's really inappropriate in the case of a 10-year-old boy who's just crossing the street in a crosswalk on his bicycle. This is not a cyclist. This is a kid who was killed by an unlicensed driver. Meanwhile, the most recent victim, Matt Travis, was a 25-year-old professional wrestler from the South Bronx. So the first death after I left the air, 10-year-old boy. The most recent death, a 25-year-old wrestler. These are all different people from all different walks of life. They all defy these notions of what a cyclist is supposed to be. We have all these stereotypes about people who ride bikes. You have columnists like Steve Quatso who say they're all entitled white bros. You have people who say, oh, these cyclists, they're just, you know, this trope about they're all transplants from Ohio, hipsters in Brooklyn riding bikes. They're not. If you listen to the list I just read you, these are all different kinds of people from all different walks of life. They have two things in common. One, they happened to be on bicycles at the time. Two, they were all, well, with the exception of Travis, in places with little to no bicycle infrastructure. Wrestling is my lifeline, Travis, who is 24. This is from a Vice profile of this latest victim. Wrestling is my lifeline, Travis, who is 24, told Vice. Every night I come home and hear how someone got shot. Like, what if I'm next? But with wrestling, I feel like finally I Have a Shot. He's dead. He was killed this weekend near the Willis Avenue Bridge in Harlem, probably headed over the bridge to the South Bronx where he lived and where the DOT has just, by the way, installed, just, the paint's practically still wet, just installed a protected bike lane on Willis Avenue. However, that entire area, as anyone who walks, drives, takes the bus, rides a bike, knows, it's a very dangerous, very chaotic area. And sadly and ironically, the Willis Avenue Bridge is probably the safest and most bikeable bridge between Manhattan and the Bronx, with the exception of the High Bridge, which is more a park than really a commuter thoroughfare. So that's where we stand right now. I'm going to be taking your calls today, 212-209-2877. Before I take the calls, before I get any further, I'm going to remind you again, we're taking pledges today. WBAI desperately needs your support, so please become a WBAI buddy. Go to the website, give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. Become a WBAI buddy and keep this program coming so I can sit here and depress you with this abject misery we're facing out here on the streets. But it won't all be misery. Riding a bike, despite all this, is not misery. It's a beautiful thing. It's a great thing. It's a thing that we should all be comfortable to do as much or as little as we want to do. You want to hop on a bike once in a while to ride to the store, ride in the park, just clear your head. You should be comfortable doing that. You want to ride your bike to school, to work every day. You should be comfortable to do that. No matter how you want to use a bike, you should be able to do it. It's really an asset to the city and to all of us. And that's really what we're talking about here. Do we have any? We have anybody on the line?
Well, not just yet.
Okay.
Well, let's give the number out for people to call in, our regular listener call-in line. And, you know, Evan, you just mentioned the fact of, you know, you should be comfortable to ride a bike if you want to or not. And that's what I've done over this past year. Certainly since you've been on the air, I've really taken to it throughout this spring. And I love riding in the city. And that's what this show is about. And we're asking you to become members of this station, become a BAI buddy, support Bike Snob, support this radio station. That's what this is all about, the radio station. Evan is here each and every week. He rides his bike here. I'm so impressed with that. But I mean, you know, somebody, this is a cyclist. What I do is I just hop on the bike once or twice a week and go riding around the city a little bit. But this is a cyclist. But it should be available, as you said, Evan, for all, for people who want to do it twice a week or once a month, or someone like yourself that rides each and every day, or someone that's whose livelihood depends on it. So it's give to G-I-V-E, number 2, W-B-A-I.org. And if you want to call in to talk to Evan, it's 212-209-2877. Evan.
All right. Beautifully said. I could not have said it better myself. In fact, he said it better. Maybe I should just leave now. Okay. Anyway, so the only driver... We're talking about these deaths that have happened in the last month. The only driver to be charged in any of these deaths, I believe, was Victor Mejia, the killer of the 10-year-old boy, who was charged with failure to yield, failure to exercise due care, and driving without a license. By the way, none of these charges take into account the fact that he killed a little boy. These are just charges related to driving without the license, the manner in which the failure to yield. None of this reflects the fact that a boy is dead. These charges are not more severe because of that. So we're basically at the point now where we're losing a person a week on a bike in New York City. This is just people on bikes. I'm not even getting into pedestrians here. who are being killed, also in disturbing numbers. This is a bike-centric show, so I'm talking about people on bikes. That's in no way to imply that these deaths are more worrisome or more serious than pedestrian deaths. By no means. That just happens to be the focus of this show. But it's terrible out there for pedestrians, too. We're having a real epidemic. And to that end, you may have heard that Cory Johnson, City Council Speaker Cory Johnson, has a streets master plan, which on October 30th passed the City Council with a super majority. And I'm going to read to you now the outline, the bullet points of this streets master plan, which is designed to make the streets survivable, because at this point they're hardly survivable. Okay, the first plan would be due in December 2021 and would include 150 miles of physically or camera protected bus lanes over 5 years. Transit signal priority at 750 intersections during the first year and 1,000 intersections during each subsequent year. So these are transit signals. These are light timings designed to make the buses move more efficiently. 250 miles of protected bike lanes over 5 years, with at least 30 miles in the first year and 50 miles in each subsequent year. Bus stop upgrades, like benches, shelters, and real-time passenger information at 500 bus stops each year. Redesigning at least 2,000 signalized intersections over 5 years, with at least 400 redesigns each year. Accessible pedestrian signals at no fewer than 2,500 intersections, with at least 500 installations each year. Assessing and amending commercial loading zones and truck routes. Developing parking policies to promote the master plan's goals of safety, mass transit use, reduced vehicle emissions, and access for individuals with disabilities. And within the first 2 years, create and maintain 1 million square feet of pedestrian space. I believe we have a call. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Manny the Teamster, and you were sorely missed. I love this show.
Oh, thank you. Very kind of you. Good to hear from you. I missed you, too.
Did you miss my accent here?
I missed you and all you have to offer. What do you got for us?
All right, I'm just spitballing here, but I noticed on Queens Boulevard, the bike lanes are very wide.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, is it possible or is this a good idea to have, like, either the north or south side, make the ordinance that it can be parking and make, like, let's say the north side, two-way traffic for bicycles, like on Delancey Street. Is this far-fetched, or what are you thinking?
I don't know what stretch of Queens Boulevard you're referring to. I'm going to be perfectly honest and say it's been a while since I've been on the Queens Boulevard bike lane. A couple months ago, I rode out to Cunningham Park, where there are mountain bike trails out in Queens. I took the Queens Boulevard bike lane you're saying move the bike lane to the middle and what, put the parking back that the bike lane?
All right, what I'm saying is choose a side, north or south. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's like you see the green path, but next to it you'll see like brown.
Right.
So make it like two-way traffic, like on Delancey Street. Have you been on Delancey Street around the bridge?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that far-fetched, or what do you think?
It may be. I'm not a traffic engineer, but, you know, the brown space you're referring to is generally pedestrian space. That's pedestrianizing space. So, you know, one thing to remember about the bike lanes is that the bike lanes are obviously there to facilitate cycling and to keep people on bikes safe, but they also have another function, which is to help calm the traffic. That's not to slow the traffic or to stop the traffic, to calm the traffic, to make it easier and safer for pedestrians, you know, to shorten crossing distances, for example. So sometimes you'll have this brown space, and that's pedestrian refuge space. And you have Queens Boulevard is massive with the travel lanes and the service roads on either side. And I mean, crossing Queens Boulevard it's an undertaking. It's like crossing, it's crossing the Red Sea. So, you know, I'm going to give the DOT the benefit of the doubt with regard to the design. Again, I'm not a regular Queens Boulevard. I live in the Bronx. I do ride in Queens fairly often, but I don't ride the length of Queens Boulevard. I do that so intermittently. So, you know, I'm not gonna try to, you know, give a thorough accounting or vetting of the DOT's design. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that all of these factors probably went into their design. And, you know, if you look at a bike lane in terms of, oh, could we move it here to bring the parking back or make it easier to park? You know, that may very well be at odds with the goal of making crossing safer or keeping the sight lines. You know, another thing that's a big problem out there, and that bike lanes and these pedestrian refuges and brown kind of textured areas on the pavement are there for, is, you know, it's called daylighting. In other words, get the parked cars out of the way so you can see around the corner. You can see oncoming traffic. It's really hard. I drive too. I find it incredibly vexing when I'm driving. If I approach a stop sign at a corner, I can't see around the corner because cars are parked all the way up to the crosswalk. And you can't see around the corner, so you have to inch out. And so all of these come into play. So again, I'm not gonna try to second guess what they did or say you're wrong or right. You know, you may have some good insight. It sounds like you probably know Queens Boulevard better than I do. I am gonna say, you live there?
My girlfriend.
Your girlfriend lives there. Okay, so you're there more than I am. So I am just going to say, though, that you got to give the DOT a little benefit of the doubt and look at it not just as a driver. Look at it as somebody who's trying to cross the street on foot and all of these things.
Yeah, my girlfriend and I, we do refer to it as Death Boulevard because of all the accidents that happened there.
Yeah.
But that's it. And my final thought is, Brompton's
fantastic bikes. Thank you so much. Thank you for calling in. We're going to take some more calls. Before we do, I'm going to say very, very quickly, please give to WBAI.org. In fact, that is the website you should go to. Give to WBAI.org. Become a WBAI buddy so you can hear from me and Manny, the Teamster, and everybody. And it's a party here. And please join it. Become a BAI buddy and support this show and support this station. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
I'm Paul. I think I've been on the air with you, but I didn't say anything because the other guy was still finishing.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I second that about, you know, give to WBAI. I was a BAI buddy, and I'm going to try to resume that because when I heard about the coup, right away I stopped that. I stopped the contributions because, you know, I thought that was the wrong way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Anyway.
Thank you for your support.
From this long-standing listener, I'd like to just remind people of the correct safety procedures, we'll call it, mm-hmm. for themselves, like wear white at night. That's a good one, I guess,
mm-hmm.
if you can. Or yellow, you know, I have this, you know, windbreaker thing that I put on at night, and that's not reflective. Oh, also reflective strips on your helmet and on the back of your bike, or a flashing, you know, ankle light, maybe both. And then the other things are correct hand signals. From the left side, you should be signaling like straight across if you're going to make a left turn, like through traffic, through oncoming traffic. Or if you want to make the right-hand turn, then you would put the same hand up, the left hand up, but as like a broken, you know, an upward arm.
Mm-hmm.
To make the right-hand turn. And by the way, I learned this when I was a motorcycle operator. You could also use the left-hand down as mm-hmm. a stop sign.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm stopping, you know, kind of thing. So those are just some simple things to think about when you're out there and you don't want to get run down. Nobody does. And you know, I think it's great. Oh, also, my tenant came back last night, and he had gotten hit by a car. His hand was bruised or something, but he's okay. But apparently, you know, there's a lot more pedestrian, you know, involvements with cars than even the bicycles.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's appalling that at least five of us, or whatever your count was there, have been killed in the interim when you've been off the air.
Yeah.
So
yes, the pedestrian, it's epidemic for pedestrians, too. This is by no means a problem limited to bicycles. I appreciate and thank you for the safety insight. You know, absolutely, I agree that visibility, as visible as you can be, helps. I just, and is crucial. At the same time, I want to temper this a little bit with, you know, on one hand, absolutely, you know, if you can be visible, every little bit helps. At the same time, there is often too much pressure and overemphasis on cyclists and pedestrians being visible, and it leads the danger here, not that you shouldn't be visible. I'm not saying don't be visible. What I am saying is when we focus too much on this stuff, it almost gives a tendency to absolve drivers. So, you know, it's not always practical. It's not always feasible to be covered head to toe in reflectors, especially if you're a pedestrian. You know, you're wearing what you're wearing. You go out in the morning, then the sun goes down now at 4:30 or 5. You're wearing your clothes. You haven't gotten dressed in the morning with visibility in mind. And as important as this stuff is, whether you're on a car or in a bike, we're also in a city. We're in a city with lights. We're in a city where people are coming and going at all hours. There should be a certain amount of latitude. It should not be a death sentence to be caught outside at night without reflectors on. And again, this is not to you know, impugn your advice or anything like that. And you know, and with regard to hand signals, hand signals are great. I definitely think as a someone on a bicycle, you should communicate your intentions as clearly as possible, and there's no downside to doing it. It does help. It helps even with pedestrians. You know, let them know where you're going. The thing with as far as using the correct hand signals, I sort of disagree with you. I semi disagree. I don't vociferously disagree, and I moderately disagree with using the traditional hand signals. Only because you're a trained motorcyclist, and I too have taken a motorcycle course, which, as I've said before, I think I've learned more from a motorcycle course than I certainly in driver's ed, and in that taking that motorcycle safety course in a short amount of time, I learned so much about traffic and safety, and I still think of what I learned in that class, and I learn about it. I think about it when I'm on a bicycle all the time. And at the same time, those hand signals were taught, which I believe evolved from driving old cars before there were turn signals. They evolved from where your hand would be visible from outside of the car. Not everybody else has taken a motorcycle safety course. And most of these drivers took driver's ed, if they took it at all. You know, people have taken it 20, 30, 40 years ago. They don't remember these signals. And I'm not saying not to use them. I'm saying I often, what I do, and it also depends on which hand I have free, I try very clearly to point at where I'm going. And I think this is equally valid to just, you know, point very clear.
Yeah, you can
clear.
Point with your right
I'm
hand.
I'm going here. Yeah, if someone's on my right, I'm going here. Like, I'll point, you know, I'll make a motion with my hand, like, you know, like in Goodfellas when he's telling him to go around the corner. I say, I'm going around the corner. And, you know, I think that's fine. That's fine, too. This is my opinion and comes from my experience. But.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I've noticed when I've signaled left, you know, that people are bunching more over to the right,
yeah,
you know, to get around me,
yeah,
the people in cars, that is. And, you know, maybe they're thankful, or at least wise, I hope they are thankful that I'm doing that, you know, because I'm all the way in the left hand of the lane that's available.
Yes, I do think.
And they're wondering maybe what the hell is this cyclist doing taking from the middle of the road, you know.
You're
whatever,
right.
You know?
You're right. It shows this is why I'm in front of you, because I'm turning. Yes, that can help. There's always going to be the driver who's impatient and irritable no matter what. But yes, absolutely, to communicate that intention,
right,
so they can put it in context what you're doing. Oh, he's turning. Absolutely.
Right. Also,
yeah,
one other thing I just thought of, rear view visibility. Like, I've seen other cyclists, I don't have this on my helmet, have a rear view, like, little round mirror,
mm-hmm,
to look into to check out the traffic behind them, or on the handlebars,
mm-hmm,
which is where the motorcyclists would have their, mm-hmm, rear view mirrors, and I think those are wise things as a defensive mechanism for cycling.
Nothing wrong with a mirror, absolutely. Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for the insight. I believe we're going to take a short break here. When we come back, I'll take more calls. 212-209-2877. Short break.
Thank each and every one of you for coming by.
And while he's thanking those folks, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners and support staff, our contributors, our interns, the volunteers, producers, and the entire crew that works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
Kindly write down this reminder to yourself. Saturday, the 16th of November. Yes, November 16th, 2019. An extraordinary experience will come your way. Prepare yourself.
Hi, this is Tony Roberts, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth since 1960.
Okay, this is Eben Weiss. You're listening to Bike Snob here on WBAI. Here at WBAI, we need your support to keep Bike Snob and all the other great programs on this station going. So please join, pledge, become a WBAI buddy. Go to the website, give to WBAI.org. That's give, number two, WBAI.org. Become a WBAI buddy and support this station and all the programming you listen to here. So this is Bike Snob. We're talking about bikes in New York City. The listener, if you're a listener and you want to call in, please do 212-209-2877 to join the discussion. We're talking about bike cycling in the city. We're talking about the Streets Master Plan that Corey Johnson, council speaker, recently had passed in the city council. We're talking about the mounting death toll, and we're just talking about riding bikes. So all of your insight is appreciated. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Anthony, how are you?
Hi, Anthony. I'm good. How are you?
Good to hear you back.
Thanks.
I still don't like the title of your show. I think it's defensive. I'm a pedestrian, a bicyclist, and a car driver. And so I like to look at the road from three points of view. And also the previous caller who mentioned with the hand signals,
mm-hmm,
there's an old time, I'm a retired union carpenter, and a carpenter is only good as his tools. And so when I go on my bike at night, regardless of what I need, regardless of the fact that the city is lit up, I make it my business to let people know that I am on my bike. I let people know. So I try to be as reflective as possible. And I think all bicyclists should take that approach to the road, regardless, because it's there, you're there, and you're there alone on a bicycle with people, Uber drivers. You know, I'm the guy always complains to you about the Uber drivers. They still do the same crap. And to your point earlier, like Brooklyn Bridge Park, we were there the other day, my wife and I walking, and they redid the whole path over because they did the street all over repaved. And they put a whole new section in where the double green lanes are, mm-hmm. and then a walk path right next to it.
Mm-hmm.
And where are the people walking with their carriages?
Mm-hmm.
In the green lane.
Right.
And then as you approach Brooklyn Bridge Park, there's a narrow path that says bike path.
Mm-hmm.
And where do the people go with their carriages? To the bike path.
Mm-hmm.
That's with the Brooklyn Bridge Park. So your mission, and I can't tell you your job, is to convince the people that are the pedestrians, the drivers like myself that see the stealth bicycles, the bicycles you can't hear or never hear until your eyeballs pick them up, coming right at you, going down the wrong way. Those bikes are constantly going the wrong way on a daily basis. They might not be recreationalists like myself, but they are on a bicycle, which allows people in cars or pedestrians to get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Why is not one show of yours ever going on to the people? Because those are people trying to make a living. And I want nothing against a person trying to make a living, but there's certain rules. Don't go down towards Smith on Bergen Street because you got to go one block over to Wyckoff to go down from Portland. And just go straight down Bergen Street.
Well,
the opposite way.
The reason I don't make it the central focus of a show or start off with a long screed or monologue about how about this issue because
you all be stuck with drivers. You blame drivers.
Right, because what I'm doing here is I'm looking at the actual numbers. I'm looking at who's being injured and killed out there. And while it's certainly an issue, and while there are people on delivery bikes who don't have lights and go the wrong way, that I'm not okay with that. You shouldn't be doing that. It's not right. But there's two things you got to remember. Number one is that all of those things are illegal and already. And the NYPD can and does enforce that. So, you know, that already exists. That enforcement exists. Those laws exist. All of this stuff exists. And the second thing is that as vexing as that can be, as irritating as that can be, and yes, you can, it does happen that someone on a bike or an e-bike, it does happen that they will collide occasionally with a pedestrian. It's not something that doesn't happen. At the same time, if you look at the actual numbers out there, it's not a problem even remotely approaching the problem that motor vehicle injuries and deaths represent. It's just
two
not even
don't make
it's
a
just
right.
not
I'm
even
sorry.
That two wrongs don't make a right, but if you have two problems and one's an epidemic and one is a nuisance, which one are you going to address first? I'm not going to sit here and harp on and shame.
That's why you call your show Bike Snob, because you
right.
sound like a snob. I'm going over the bridge, going from Prospect Park Circle to do a bike ride on Ocean Parkway, and I'm on the side that directs me to go from Prospect Park Circle towards Ocean Parkway. And what do I got coming at me? Somebody making a delivery on an electric bike, and I got to swerve out of the way, and that's a tiny bit.
Well, you know, I mean, Ocean Parkway.
No, I'm not on Ocean Parkway. I'm on that bridge. After Park Circle, you follow the bike path. It takes you over a bridge that has alongside that overpass that takes you from Ocean Parkway.
Oh, okay. I know that. I do know that. I know the one you're talking about.
And I had, and there was a person coming right at me, making the delivery with an electric bike. Now, if I hit that electric bike in that narrow path, I was able, thank God, to get out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Listen,
you do your show.
No, I'm doing it.
Day, the people that are making people angry with bicyclists are not someone like me or you. It's the electric bikes that are running from point A to point B as fast as they can because they're working for various companies, and God forbid they hurt someone. I doubt if they're being insured or anything like that.
No, you're absolutely, yeah. No, thank you. I always appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Look, this is something that advocates talk about a lot, is the problem with delivery cyclists. You know, a big part of the problem is a lack of infrastructure and, again, a commercial structure that encourages them to rush from delivery to delivery. They're not working for one company who's accountable for their behavior. They're working for a delivery service in Uber or, Seamless or whoever it is now. And they're just picking up jobs, catch as catch can, and they have to scramble to make a living. And it's not a good situation for anybody. So all of these things are known. Going to take another call. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Oh, hey, Evan. This is Charles Komanoff.
Hi. Yes, Charles Komanoff.
Hey,
esteemed Charles, good to hear from you. Thank you. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Well, esteemed because of the prestige I got from being on your show a couple of months ago.
Yeah, obviously.
Hey, I hope you had a great ride down to downtown Brooklyn from Riverdale this morning?
Today, well, not to bore you with my story, but I actually came from Astoria this morning.
That's nothing, of course.
Yeah, that was a nice short ride and mostly on a bike network, so some nice sections.
Yeah, and great to have you back, and of course great to have our WBAI back.
You
mentioned Cunningham Park as a place that you'd gone to in the past couple of months. And, you may know, but maybe most of your listeners don't know, that Cunningham Park is also the domicile of the NYPD Highway Division.
Okay.
Which is the, the high booted, supposedly crack team of, they do a lot of things, but they also house the NYPD's Collision Investigation Squad, which is supposedly the crack investigators who are sent to the site of every traffic fatality in the five boroughs and who supposedly meticulously, with chalk and tape and compasses and who the hell knows what else, record the geometry and the behaviors of the participants in each fatal crash. And they then distill all this stuff into reports that never see the light of day, except that occasionally, and I was part of this 20 years ago, back in 1999, there were 35 cyclist fatalities that year. That was like the Mount Everest of bike fatalities, and that's only now being rivaled by the 28 that we have so far this year. A volunteer with Right of Way, a militant street action pedestrian and cyclist rights organization I was affiliated with back then, was able to get from the NYPD several dozen of these forensic reports from the NYPD Collision Investigation Squad, and they did have some, pretty detailed information as to what the parties, and especially what the drivers, were doing immediately proximate to the fatal crashes.
Mm-hmm.
And we at Right of Way were able to use that material to produce a report the following May. This is now in the spring of 2000, that basically indicted drivers much more than cyclists as being responsible for the vast majority of cyclist fatalities. And ever since then, I've tried, some of us have tried, now and again, to shame whoever was mayor or whoever was the police commissioner into releasing these reports on a routine basis, because they do contain at least more information on what caused these crashes that were fatal, you know, to the pedestrian or cyclist or driver. And because it's this show, we're at this moment more interested in the cyclists. But nobody's ever been able to shake loose these reports. So it's a huge amount of information. Developed at great expense to the taxpayers of New York City, that sits in locked drawers deep in the NYPD Highway Division redoubt in Cunningham Park in Queens that nobody ever gets to see. No public health specialists, no crash specialists, no advocates. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just want to put this out there, that with all of the reforms that are needed at the NYPD, and in fact it's such a long list when it comes simply to traffic crashes, let alone everything else having to do with with liberties of people across the city, some of us feel that the only solution is to remove the NYPD from traffic enforcement entirely.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as they're there, we ought to be getting access to these reports. So I'm just wanting to use your show to put the word out and, ask you if you think that there, could be some value in getting this detailed information out of the locked drawers of the NYPD and into the hands of the public.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Charles, for bringing this up. This is huge because, so often what informs a lot of people's opinions of cyclists and what role they play in their own demise is a narrative that emerges in the news and in the tabloids and so forth that is often based on some car-centric and some anecdotal kind of narrative that just emerges. Someone on the scene, a police spokesperson, says, "Oh, it looks like the cyclist ran the light." You never hear anything else about it. You never see, yep, as Charles says, you never see these actual reports. And then the tabloids go and they do their thing. So everybody just gets this impression that people on bikes are just haplessly wandering around out there and are just wandering in front of cars. And this is, by the same token, it's always an accident. We always, as soon as the news reports on it, they call it an accident before there's any information whatsoever. Meanwhile, the actual information, as Charles is pointing out, is locked away. And on the relatively small, it's only a small number of crashes they actually investigate, right? Because someone has to die or be likely to die for them to even be deployed. So then they are, right? So in the occasionally they actually are, and they do this analysis. No, as Charles is saying, nobody hears what actually happened. Nobody looks at these reports and analyzes why this happened and what we can do to prevent it in the future, whether it's addressing the driver behavior or the road conditions that led to it or the type of vehicle they were driving. Nothing. It's just some story you read in the press that the cyclist got hit by a car. They weren't wearing a helmet and it looks like maybe they ran the light. That's all you hear. That's it. Yeah. And it's terrible. Absolutely. And, it's interesting because, Charles, we have so much more data accessible to us now than we did even 10 years ago. I mean, you have all this open data on the New York City website that's there. I mean, if you're fairly internet savvy, you can look up how many bike crashes there are, bike on pedestrian crashes, car on bike pedestrian crashes. You can look at the police, how many tickets they're writing to drivers and for what. People are creating apps like the How's My Driving NY or Twitter bots where you can put in a license plate and you can see a car, how many camera tickets they have. I mean, we have unprecedented access to information, but here is this just crucial data about the most abjectly serious and tragic collisions, and we're doing nothing with it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for giving me those few minutes and for taking this.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Great to have you back.
Thank you for bringing that up. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Leroy from Brooklyn.
Ah, hi, Leroy.
How are you?
It's a reunion.
Yes, it is. I was going to say, following Charles Kamenoff, my God, I can't follow that. he's the man. Anyway, I wanted to say welcome back. It's great to have you back on the air. And I would have been here sooner, but I had a crash like 30 minutes ago.
Oh, no.
45 minutes. First thing, everybody is completely fine.
Good.
And I just wanted to just riff on that for 1 second, if I could.
Yeah, please. Seconds. What happened?
Coming up First Avenue, and this is, this is both of our faults, two bikes, but probably more of mine. I was rolling through the intersection near the Midtown Tunnel on First, and the light had changed right as I entered, the intersection was empty. And as I looked to my left on the far curb, there's a car that's parked, but the engine's running, and I'm now looking at it to see, is that guy going to move?
Mm-hmm.
When I look up, there is a woman of a certain age on a city bike right in front of me in my lane of the bike lane, and we head on.
But okay.
Not very fast, and we both go down, and I'm like just having now looked at myself and, which is always a humbling experience, but
yes.
I don't seem to, I have the tiniest of scratch. Mm. And she was fine. And we were both so apologetic to one another. And we were both making sure each other was fine. And when she assured me that it was fine, and both of us are saying it's my fault. And I'm saying, no, it's my fault. She's saying, no, it's my fault. And I'm thinking, my God, have you ever seen a fender bender in the city like that?
Right.
And once we both, ascertain that we're both okay, and I just, put my hand on her arm and I say, please, whatever you do, keep riding. The more of us that are out there, the safer we all are. I wasn't, coherent enough to get that last part in, but, please, keep riding. And so that just was two things.
So you had this beautifully, almost sickeningly genteel teaching moment between you, and everybody's okay. And that's beautiful. And, forgetting that everybody's okay, which is great, and that, all the analogs or how different it is to a car collision, forgetting the potential injury, forgetting the anger, forgetting everything else that might have happened if cars were involved. Another thing that didn't happen when you bumped into each other on bikes was you didn't have to wait there for like an hour with your two
right.
vehicles in the middle of the street blocking traffic, creating a traffic jam, and wait for police to come and spend time and resources writing this whole thing up and doing paperwork. I'm always like blown away by, we talk about like the loss of productivity and how inefficient cars are, and we don't really stop to think about how much of it is just cars bumping into each other and the insane consequences of that traffic people will be late to work, traffic will be stalled, the police have to come. All that has to happen because two people's appliances came together and got scratched.
Yeah, and to just pick up on the insane consequence, this is right where there's a protected bike lane, where it picks up again. And so parked cars are keeping the bikes from traffic. If we had both tumbled, into First Avenue, it would have been a completely different experience. And so that is why, we bike around the city and people say, why do you bike? It's so dangerous. It's so crazy. And the reality is, 90% of the time, it's safe, it's easy, it's convenient. There's the sheer joy of being outdoors, turning the pedals, and that's where we ride. But an infrastructure where the inevitable consequence that of folks' imperfections, attention wanders. People make mistakes.
Yes.
They should not be fatal. They should just be, we pick ourselves up, we dust ourselves off, we're both still fine and concerned about each other and go on our way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a biking infrastructure does in a way that, six lanes of traffic on First Avenue could never, ever do.
Absolutely.
So that's sort of what what I picked up on this morning, which is why I'm late. But I still did want to say, welcome back. It's great to have you on the air.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Leroy, for the story. I want to remind everybody again, pledge, become a BAI buddy. This station needs your support. Go to the website, give to WBAI.org. That's give to, number two, WBAI.org. I cannot stress enough how crucial it is for you to support this station, support these shows. If you listen to this show, support it. If you want to hear more of it, you have to support. I had a call. If you want to hear more of any of the shows on the station, you have to pledge your support. We need the support. There's no car companies here underwriting all of this stuff. And there was a caller earlier who complained that the show was called Bike Snob. If he wants to pledge enough money, I'll change the show to whatever he wants to call it. I'm kidding. This is not contractual. I'm not putting this in writing, but who knows? I can be swayed. You make a big enough pledge and you want to call this, bike hand holding person who will pat your head and tell you it's all okay. I'll call it that. I'll call it whatever you want. But thank you for listening and thank you again for your support of the show and please keep it going.
Please keep it going. Evan, before you leave, just give me a couple of minutes as we are asking people to call now. Give to WBAI.org. We're not asking you to call yet. Just go to the website. Give to, number two, WBAI.org. What is your position on helmets? Every time I go out on a bike, I have my helmet on. I see others have their helmets on. How do you feel about bikers wearing helmets?
Here's the thing. You know, there's the reality. People have very strong feelings about helmets, and they will shame you for not wearing one on a bicycle. You know, the reality of helmets is there are certain situations in which perhaps they might help you. Far fewer situations than you automatically assume for all that the helmet messaging we're subject to all of the time. All these victims I read to you today in this last month, it's, you know, if you get hit by a dump truck, that helmet's not doing anything for you. So while, you know, wearing a helmet it's not going to hurt, it could help in the right situation, but where we run into trouble is where we try to turn this into policy. You may have heard the NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board, recently recommended that there be in all 50 states mandatory helmet laws. They don't work. What works is better infrastructure. What works is keeping drivers and cyclists, giving them better separation, better facilities for them. So, you know, that's the bottom line. Helmets are not, mandating helmets is not good policy. It can be bad policy.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Evan. I was a little unsure, having listened to you all of these months, what your position is on that. Makes sound sense to me, not policy. Evan Wise, Bike Snob, here over WBAI. Thanks, Evan.
Thank you.
All right. So we're coming up to the top of the hour here in New York City at 99.5 FM, WBAI, WBAI.org. That is our website. And we are asking you to make a contribution, a tax-deductible contribution in support of Bike Snob. Give to WBAI.org. You can do that at your leisure, but I'm hoping that you'll do that now. And we're asking that for every program that 10 of you, so let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people called in today. So we need 5 of you, those 5, if you're not already a BAI buddy. We need you to become members. We need you to become BAI buddies and 5 more of you. Do that right now for us, won't you? Give to WBAI.org. Coming up next, we'll be Living for the City. We'll be right back. WBA.